I'd like to welcome to the Backseat Driver Radio Show the motoring claims guru, the man who knows more about car insurance than the insurance companies would like him to know, the one, the only, Mr. Tim Kelly. Tim, welcome to the Backseat Driver Radio Show.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Mark. It's my pleasure.
What exactly is the motor claims guru, and why are you so unique? As you say on your social media, I am unique. Go on, because I thought I was the one that was unique.
The reason why I'm unique is that I'm the only person in the country, if not the world, doing what I do. And what I do is I work as a consumer advocate, and I assist consumers when they're actually fighting against insurance companies or where they feel the insurance company isn't being fair with them. So my background is that I started off as a mechanic. I was an engineer. I worked in the motor trade. Moved on to work in insurance companies, so I understand the claims process inside out, but the primary part of what I do is I'm an engineer, so I assess vehicles.
Yeah.
And I'm very well qualified as an engineer, so I actually operate as an expert witness as well, so there's a lot of things I can go into as that, so I go to court and provide reports for them. But basically what happened was that I worked in the insurance industry for the best part of 15, 16 years.
Yeah.
Got made redundant twice, and then I realised that all the things I've been taught whilst I worked for insurance companies was false. And what happened was the company I've got now is going to be called something completely different. And as I started doing my research about the company name and what I do, what I did expanded in terms of what I intended to do. So initially I was looking at helping people with evaluations on their vehicles.
Yeah.
And I was going to be called a completely different name. I then realised people didn't look for that. And it then meant I had to become motor claim guru rather than this kind of total loss guru, was my initial thing.
Yeah.
And because I was dealing with motor claims as a larger thing, it then meant I needed to know more about that kind of process than what I did. And I then realised, as I said, that everything that I'd been taught all the last 15, 16 years was wrong.
It's just what in it, motor insurance is always considered to be a bit of a dark art. And it's something we all pay for, well, theoretically, we should all pay for every year. And we pay a lot of money hoping never to actually avail ourselves of it. It's one of those peculiar things. We buy something that we hope we'll never use. But there are times with car insurance where, to put it bluntly, the insurance company will squirm if there's a claim gone in.
They do. Well, the main thing with insurance companies is the things that they try to do is basically they deny, delay and defend.
Yeah.
So the main way they would work is they'll try and deny something's happened. They'll delay it as long as they can because it's a war of attrition.
Yeah.
And then if you've got a claim against them, say for example it's a non-fault accident, then they'll try and defend it as much as they can because the last thing they want to do is pay out on it. So yeah, that is exactly what they do. But the other side of it is that people don't realise is that insurance companies, they think that's the primary business that they earn profit from, but it's not. So insurance companies as a whole, it's a secondary business. No. So the whole part of insurance, it's just like...
They've got to be making a profit off what I'm shelling out at times.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
What they do is, if you actually look at what insurance companies make, there's something called the combined operating ratio. Mm. So what that is the amount of money they take in for the amount of money they spend out. Well, most insurance companies, it's quite small. But what they do is, and this is the reason why it's a secondary business, not a primary business, is that they take your money from your premium and then they invest it.
Yeah.
So if you don't make a claim and they invest your money, they make money.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they'll make 100% profit in a roundabout way, won't they?
And that's what they're doing with it. So if they invest your money and it loses money, they've not lost money, they've lost your money.
Yeah.
So as long as you don't claim, they've not lost.
So they're still quids in.
Yeah. And that's the way it works. So what they basically do is, the whole way insurance companies work is they actually design to not make money. Because what they want to do is they want to take your premiums away and use them to buy assets in shares and capital and any other type of finance.
So it's like a stocks and shares game.
That's it. And that's where they make the money outside of it. But what they need to do from their side of it is, it's not necessarily about them making profit, but they need to make sure they don't make a loss.
Right.
And it sounds kind of counterintuitive, but that's the reason why they are as tight as what they can do. So in terms of what you, if you make a claim and your car might be worth, for example, £10,000, they'll try to value it at less than what you might think it's worth.
Yeah.
Or something like house insurance is another side of it. I specialise in motor, but house insurance is a really good example for it, because what they'll do is, when you make a claim, they'll have a loss adjuster.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is they're adjusting their loss, they're trying to reduce their settlement. So rather than somebody going out and saying, let's evidence the whole loss you've got and put it forward and saying that's what it is and got it, they work the other way around. So they're trying to reduce their loss all the time.
Yeah. Right, so if a car's worth £10,000, if it's in an accident, they don't want it to be worth £10,000.
Well, this is where it gets tricky. So the things that we spoke about the other week in terms of what's going on in the industry at the moment, and these are the things that are quite significant, is that going back to pre-COVID times, things were a bit simpler, but insurance companies would still have the same practices. And what you'd have is that in the event your vehicle's a total loss, what they'd do is they'd reference guides that are used in the industry. So these are basically Glasses Guide Evaluator, CAP Multi Research, and then there's another one called Kazana, which has changed Kazoo. So they look at the three different guides and then they value the vehicle on that basis.
So they like take a mean average?
Yeah, something like that. So they try to determine what the market value would be. But what they do is they look at the guides and look which one kind of falls out of bed the other two. So if one guide was massively higher, they dismiss it.
Yeah.
And then look at the other two for it. But what's happened recently is that because of COVID, the used car marketplace has changed dramatically. And then...
Because the value of used cars now is going silly, isn't it?
It's going absolutely crazy. Now, the reason being for that is that because the new car marketplace is that there's a shortage in silicon chips. So we were discussing that before.
Yeah.
But also there's things in terms of the raw materials needed for them. It's been restricted massively. But also things like, because of Ukraine, that's something else, because wiring looms for a lot of the German vehicles are made over there. But you've also got the effects of Brexit. You had the effects of the Suez Canal being blocked. So there's massive part shortages in the background, which...
Because just putting in, right, most manufacturers are, even if you order a new car off them, are unable to tell you precisely how long it will be from ordering your new car to you going to collect it.
Yeah, that's it. So the build dates have just gone further and further in the future. Now, what's happened then is that because there's been a massive shortage of new vehicles in the marketplace, that's then started bringing up second-hand car prices. Now, the way this links to insurance claims is that the three guides that would mainly be used, what they would do is they work on a depreciation model.
Yeah.
So if a car was worth 10 grand 6 months ago, it might be worth £9,500. 3 months ago, it might be worth £9,000 now. But what's happened is that the marketplace has changed, and these vehicles that would have been normally depreciated are going up in value.
Yeah.
So what you've got now is that the guides that the insurance companies use don't correlate to the marketplace. So it means that if you have an accident and your car's a total loss and you're expecting it to be able to go out and replace it, because the insurance companies use these guides, it means that they're also working from data which is at least a month old.
Yeah.
And the data they're using is a lot of the time incorrect. So as a consumer, it can massively disadvantage you. There could be a big shortfall between what they pay out or they expect to pay out and what you deem to be what you'll cost to go out and replace it.
Yeah. Because certain policies, it's a case of it's like new for old, isn't it? You can get, they will try and source you a car if it's a write-off, more or less exactly the same as the one that's been written off.
There's not many insurance companies that do that. The way they'll do it, though, is that there's a part on the policy which is called new vehicle replacement. So generally, there's certain conditions on the contract where they'll do that. So if the vehicle's less than a year old and below a certain type of mileage for it, and they know the repair cost on the vehicle will be a certain amount, then what they'll then do is they'll say, well, on that basis, because it's less than a year old, then they'll do new vehicle replacement.
Yeah.
The thing, again, that's affecting the insurance industry at the moment is they can't get the new vehicles. Now, what we'll then have is then go, well, in the event that we can't replace your vehicle, then we'll pay out the market value.
Yeah.
So they'll refer back to the guys to look at the value, but what you've then got is that if the market value of the vehicle, a good example, Audis.
Yeah.
So Audis and Land Rovers are the prime ones for this at the moment, but most vehicles in general. So what a lot of the dealers are doing is, because they know there's such a shortage in supply on these new vehicles, they're then contacting previous owners and saying, we've got a buyer for your car, we sell it back to us.
Yeah. So what's I've heard about this, and ironically enough, with you saying Land Rovers, I know two people who've bought the new Defenders, and within 12 months of buying them, the dealer has been back onto them. Would you like to part with it? To a degree, we can probably pay you more than you paid for it.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's happening. Now, the issue that's got, certainly for somebody like me, as an engineer who inspects vehicles and then values them, is that if the guys don't represent the marketplace, what I'll do is I'll go away and do market research. I can compile a report and go, well, I've got a report and I've done my research and this is what it says. But I need to look at examples of the marketplace to do that. The issue that we've got is that because the dealers are going directly to their previous customers and buying the vehicles off them directly, they never appear. So it then means, as an engineer, I don't have any evidence that I can rely on to substantiate that this dealer's gone out and paid seven grand more for it than what it would have been in the market.
So if a dealer buys a vehicle off an existing customer, it technically doesn't appear anywhere, because it'll just go from its previous owner, its first owner, to its next owner, because the dealer technically won't have anything to do with it. I know he will do.
Yeah, but they'll make the profit on it.
Yeah.
But, like I said, it'll never end up in a forecourt. It'll never get advertised anywhere.
Yeah.
So, like I said, from my point of view, I can't go away and provide evidence to put in my report to substantiate the reason why these vehicles are worth more money.
Yeah.
But what it then does is, it then means that, from a consumer's point of view, if you've got a vehicle of this type that's relatively new, that's in demand, that on the one hand you've got the guides undervaluing your car.
Yeah.
You're then being told that you need to substantiate the reason why your vehicle's worth more money by providing examples.
Yeah.
You can't provide more examples. You're coming to me as an expert doing what I do, and I, like I said, provide two different services from that side of it, where on the one hand I act as an engineer valuing vehicles, but I also act in such a way where I'll negotiate with the insurance company on your behalf.
Yeah.
But I'm getting to the situation where I'm getting stuck because I can't find the evidence in the marketplace because the dealers are getting the cars before they even come for sale and selling them to somebody else.
Yeah.
So as a consumer, there's a real issue of detriment there, whereas you could be financially a lot worse off than you know what you were when before your car was damaged. So the things that you could should be doing then is that the question you might be asking me then is, what do I do in that situation? Well, the primary thing you need to be doing is, if the repair cost on the vehicle are less than the market value, you want to be pushing as much as you can to get the vehicle repaired.
Yeah.
That's the main thing I would advise anybody at the moment as well. And the other thing is that you need to also understand that you have the right to choose whoever it is who repairs your car as well. So the insurance
Because that's one thing, a lot of insurance companies insist that a car repair goes to a specific place. I know people who will say, no, I don't want it to go there, I don't want it to go to A, I want it to go to B. And I've known wrangles break out because they don't want it to go to where the insurance company wants it to go.
Yeah, and you've got the complete legal entitlement to choose where your car goes to. So you can choose to whoever it is repairs your car.
Yeah.
The insurance company can't do anything about that, but they'll try. So things that they'll try to do is that it's always very important that when you're taking a policy out that you make sure that you read all the terms and conditions of that policy before you do.
Yeah.
Now, what insurance companies are now trying to do, so basically it's called steerage. So they're trying to steer you, as a consumer, away from your choice of repairer into their network.
Yeah.
And the reason being is that a lot of the contracts these repairers work under with the insurance company, they make very little profit and the labour rates are very low, and you'll find that they're very bonus incentivised.
Yeah.
And the quality of the repairs, there's a lot of repairers out there that do really good quality of work, but to make their profit, they're reliant on a large volume of work going through. Now,
or doing it as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Or what you may also find as well is, and there's a lot of insurance companies doing this that didn't do it in the past, but you might well find that if you use your insurance company's approved repairer,
yeah,
that they'll fit second-hand parts on your car.
Oh.
Or non-original parts.
Yeah.
Now, if you've got an older vehicle that might be 10 year old, you know,
it might not make a lot of difference, really, might it?
But if you've got a vehicle that's 2 or 3 year old, then it's highly likely that you'll invalidate the paint warranty on the vehicle.
Yeah.
Highly likely to invalidate the anti-corrosion warranty on your vehicle, but also certainly in the situation where if you're fitting second-hand parts to your vehicle and you've had an accident that's not your fault,
yeah,
then you have different sets of entitlement in law than what you would normally do through claim through your insurance company. So there's an aspect of law called tort law. So a tort, T-O-R-T, is called a civil wrong. Now, when somebody crashes into you and you're subject to a civil wrong, you're entitled to be put back in the situation you were in prior to your loss.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you've had new parts in your vehicle before that were from the manufacturer.
Yeah.
If you've got a relatively new car.
Yeah.
So why would you want a second-hand one on there?
Yeah.
Or an original one? Now, there's another part of what you can do when you're claiming under this civil wrong. It's called diminution in loss. So diminution in loss is basically the diminished value of the car as a result of being involved in the accident. Nothing to do with the repair cost. It's purely having that knowledge that the car's been involved in an accident. It would mean that even though it's been repaired correctly, in the event of an accident and it's been done fantastically, both vehicles are at a point of sale, so you've got a vehicle that hasn't been damaged and one that has.
Yeah.
It's highly likely that the one that's been damaged is going to be worth less than the one that hasn't.
Yeah.
Now, the issue you've got is that if you're fitting second-hand parts of the vehicle, it's highly likely it's going to be worth less yet again.
Yeah.
But it also then means if you try to present a claim to the insurance company on the other side, they'll reject it because they'll go, well, the vehicle's not lost value as a result of being involved in the accident. It's because your body shop has chosen to sit second-hand bits on it.
Yeah.
So there's...
Well, I think the other problem with second-hand bits is there's no warranty on a second-hand part, is there? If it's been previously used, it could be damaged itself.
It could, but it also...
I'm not saying it will be.
Yeah, but it also creates massive issues for the actual body shop. So I provide a range of different services. So I provide services to consumers, but what I also do is actually provide consultancy services to body shops.
Yeah.
And I teach them about business, how to make profit, how to deal with insurance companies. But a lot of the things I actually do is I teach consumer law to them. And the thing that they miss out on is that if they're working with an insurance company and this insurance company says, like, right, we want you to fit second-hand bits on this car,
Yeah. The
liability of the repair of that vehicle lies with the repairer, not with the insurance company.
Right.
Now, as a consumer, if you feel that car's not been repaired correctly, then under the 2015 Consumer Rights Act, you've got the right to reject goods.
Yeah.
So you could go, I'm not happy with the repair of that. I want you to redo it, as an example. So part of the Consumer Rights Act.
And the onus is on the repair shop, not the insurance company.
It is. But what happens then is that if the vehicle is faulty, and the reason why it's faulty is a result of that second-hand part,
Yeah. Then
you've got a right to actually ask for that rework, that work to be redone.
Yeah.
So then they may then have to take off that second hand part and fit a new part.
At their own expense.
Or even worse than that, from a body shop's point of view, is that where, as a consumer, you've lost faith in that original repairer,
Yeah. Which
in most cases is highly likely, if you look at your car and it's been repaired shockingly, it's got second-hand bits on it, you don't really want to go back there, do you?
Yeah.
But it would then mean that you've got the right to take your vehicle to a manufacturer-approved repairer
Yeah. And
get it rectified correctly, using all
these and send the bill to the original repairer.
Pretty much, yeah. You take them to court to do it, but it then means that this original repairer that's working with the insurance company,
Yeah. The
insurance company, that hand, you know, they've washed their hands of it. It's not their problem.
Yeah.
But you, as a repairer, could end up with a massive bill for the rectification cost of this vehicle as a result of using second-hand bits on it.
Yeah.
And you've prejudiced yourself by contracting the insurance company to do that. So there's real things, issues, not just on behalf of consumers, but also on behalf of body shops at the side of it as well. It's a real dangerous situation that they're putting themselves in. I mean, if I was a body shop, I wouldn't be contracting with any insurance company.
Yeah.
Because fundamentally, it's your business and you should be choosing who repairs your car. Well, not who repairs your car, but as a body shop, you should be choosing how you repair the vehicle.
Yeah.
Because you're responsible for it.
Yeah.
And certainly in terms of when you're contracting with an insurance company as well, what you've also got is an engineer like me acting on their behalf. And when they want to basically negotiate costs with you, they'll be trying to dictate how your car is repaired as well.
Yeah.
So this again is something where if you're choosing your own repairer to repair your vehicle for them, they're acting on your behalf, not the insurance companies. So again, it gives you more faith that because you're going to your own repairer and choosing to them to repair your car,
Yeah. That
they're going to repair it to the manufacturer standards using the correct methodology of repair, the correct parts, the correct materials that you need, and processes. So it then means that you've got somebody else in your corner working for you, basically.
Right. So, I mean, the other problem is, and I'm just going to use Citroën as an example. It isn't unique to this manufacturer. But if a modern Citroën gets a bump on its front near side corner, at one point in time, you might replace the wing and you might replace the bumper. Now, they have to remove and replace more or less the entire front of the car because of how the modern car is constructed. And when they take all the plastic shrouding off, the bumper as such is like a bar. Okay, it's got shock absorbers on to absorb initial impact, but that will want replacing. So what was a few years ago a simple repair is now quite a sizable repair because of the construction of the modern car. And therefore, is now quite an expensive repair compared to how much it would have cost previously. And this is what the body shops and the insurance companies will all have to take into account, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's that and there's much more as well. So what you've got with modern vehicles is it's not just the actual construction methods. What you've also then got is advanced driver assistance systems.
Yeah.
So most vehicles now will have radar in the front of them.
Mm.
So something as innocuous as a small bump in a car park on your front bumper.
Yeah.
Could be a lot more serious than you think, because behind the front bumper or behind the front grille might be a radar sensor or a sonar sensor, and if that's been knocked out of the tree, that controls things like your automatic emergency braking. You've got brake assist, which puts your brakes on even sooner, but also things like if you're doing automatic cruise control, it's looking at the distances between you and the car in front and when you drive along. If that sensor's pointing the wrong direction, if it's pointing at the floor, it then means it could actually affect how the car performs.
Yeah.
So something as simple as a little accident like that, and this again is a good reason to make sure that whoever's repairing your car has access to the correct repair methodology.
From the manufacturer, it knows what they're doing.
Yeah, well, things like with anything to do with advanced driver assistance systems. So I'll just say it's called an ADAS system.
Yeah.
Easier to say there rather than the whole advanced driver assistance side of it. So the thing you got with ADAS systems is that they need recalibrating. Mm. And basically, it could be anything as simple as you've got a wheel that's been banged.
Yeah.
Now that you might think, well, why do we need the advanced driver assistance system recalibrating when it's just a wheel? Well, the reason being is that the height of the suspension, things like tire pressures can affect them.
Yeah.
The geometry of the vehicle. So if you think that if the vehicle doesn't actually steer in the right direction and it's slightly out, then the vehicle needs to know it's going in a straight line.
Yeah.
So something as simple as, again, you might have gone down a pothole and give it a bad bang or something, you know, somebody drove into
it. Which isn't unusual these days.
No. Where if that vehicle then, when it's been repaired, hasn't had the geometry done, and then the ADAS again recalibrated to make sure it's right,
yeah,
it then means that it might not be performing as it should have done, as intended by the manufacturer. So the way vehicles are in terms of how advanced they are, it's a lot more complex. But again, as a consumer, you need to basically have this knowledge and be carrying out your own research before you contact your own insurance company and reading your policy details. Even better, go on my website, www.multiclaimguru.co.uk. Tons of free information on there, tons of free resource. I've got thousands and thousands of pages on it going through all your consumer rights. As a consumer, when you're dealing with an insurance company, the best way to claim. If you have an accident, whether it's your fault or somebody else's fault, is it best to claim from your insurance company? Do I use a credit hire company, an accident management company? Do I deal with the insurance company, the third party insurance company directly? I've got the pros and cons of how to do that.
Yeah.
So all free. Things in terms of if you weren't happy with the valuation of your vehicle, again, I'll tell you how to. You know, it's always best if you instruct me to help you.
Yeah.
But you can do 90% of what I do by reading my website for free.
Right.
And it's all about educating yourself before you do it, because the way it works with insurance companies is that they are professional litigators. They've got, you know, they deal with insurance claims daily, day in, day out. They are polished professionals at what they're doing, whereas most people, it might be the first time they've had an accident.
Yeah.
So from the very forefront, and you're more concerned because you're still in shock, you've had an accident, you're upset, you're emotional, and you just want to report it and get it sorted.
And the other thing is, your car could be your lifeline as such, and it could be your only car. You need it back, or you need a set of wheels in your driveway.
Yeah, and more important than that, it's the second biggest investment you'll ever make in your life, generally, so next to your house. So making sure you actually protect your investment and making sure that whatever you do is in your best interest and not in the insurance or the insurance company's interest.
Yeah.
It's fundamental to what you're doing. So, and the best way of doing that is by educating yourself before you do. So, like I said, go on my website, have a good read around it. Tons and tons of free information on there. And then when you get to a situation where you think, actually, Tim, this is a bit more than what I thought I could do with, then there's a lot of there's a lot of things I can do as a consultant where I can help you out. But the kind of thing that I've done is that I've gone from basically being a gamekeeper to a poacher.
Yeah.
So I love what I do.
They'll love you with insurance companies, won't they?
Oh, they. it's really weird as well.
I'm talking to Tim Kelly. Oh no.
And I say there's a lot of insurance companies that do that, but when I first started off, they absolutely despised me with a passion. Whereas what's happened now is it's kind of gone full circle. Whereas a lot of them respect me because the way. Again, the question you might ask me is, well, how do you do what you do when you're dealing with insurance companies? And what at the start of the conversation, you said to me, so what is it that's unique about you? What's unique about me is that, aside from having knowledge of the insurance industry and being an engineer, which in itself is kind of one thing, I'm an expert in insurance law, consumer law, contract law, but the primary part of where the tools that I use are to do with the regulations by which insurance companies must abide by.
Right.
So what you've got, The whole financial industry works on this premise, basically. So not just insurance, it's just everything. So we, as the electorate, elect somebody to represent us in Parliament. So you've got a Member of Parliament. The Members of Parliament are there to make sure that the general population are protected. So in the financial industries, what they'll do is they'll need to make sure there's laws that apply that control industries from taking the mickey out of us. So there's a specific regulation, well, a specific law, which is statute, which is called the Financial Service and Markets Act 2000. So this relates to banking, mortgages, insurance, everything. Now we have this law, you need a regulator to look after it, which is the Financial Conduct Authority. In the event that you're not happy, there needs to be an arbiter. So that's the Financial Ombudsman Service. So at some point, if you've got an arbiter looking at a complaint, they need to know why it is you're not happy and what regulations might not be abided by. So what you've got then is that the Financial Conduct Authority has regulations specific to this, what industry it is. So the one that's specific to insurance is called ICOBS, which is called the Insurance Conduct of Business Standards. And the tools that I use is basically, I've memorized every regulation through all the way through the book.
Yeah.
Now what you've got is that, in general, 90% of the people who work for an insurance company don't know the regulations. So half of them don't even know that they're even there in the background, let alone know...
Because you get the feel at times when you ring up to insure your car, you speak to somebody who's always very nice, he asks you a load of questions and tells you that it's being recorded and everything else, then he runs through a set of questions, parrot fashion, to which you will answer yes or no, then he presses a button and technically spits out two or three quotes and he'll say, this one's the best one, do you want that one? Yes, give us your credit card number, bingo, off you go.
Yeah, so... And the kind of direction I'm looking
at. But they don't actually need to know all the laws. I mean, technically, well, I could do that, couldn't I?
Yeah, so, I mean, the side you're looking at is kind of the sales side of it, so I'll come back to that in a second. The bit that where I help people is on the claim side of it, and that's where the regulations are more relevant. But going back to the sales side of it, there's things there that are really important that you just kind of touched on, probably without realising it. So what you've got is that if you're actually speaking to an insurance company, so this is something, if you're a listener at the moment, this is something really, really important that you need to know. If you're buying your vehicle insurance through a price comparison website or on the internet, it's called a non-advised sale. So what you've got in a non-advised sale is they're reliant on the information you provide them to make sure the policy you're buying is fit for what you want.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you're not a professional.
No.
So you're just going on there and thinking, well, that'll do.
Yeah.
It's cheap, it's worth. Never buy on price. Always make sure you read through the policy terms and conditions before you actually click on it, because what you might find is, certainly on some price comparison websites, so I won't mention the main ones, will be just for any reasons that they might try and come back at us, but you might find that when you click on a price comparison website for a policy, the policy might be 10 months rather than 12 months.
Yeah. All right.
So you might well find, yeah, it's a cheap quote, but
it's 2 months shorter than you're expecting.
12 months. It might have restrictions on it. So when I said to you about the steerage aspects of insurance companies trying to steer you away from using their repairer, what you might find is that they might try and put an increased excess on your policy.
Yeah.
Now, there's things where I deal with that side of it. So people, so again, this is something contrary to most people's belief, where they'll say, well, it's in the contract, I have to abide by it because it's in the contract. Mm. But they're actually separate. So when I said, like, I'm an expert in consumer law, the bits where this comes into it is that just because something's in a contract doesn't necessarily mean it's applicable. So right. Things you've got is you've got Unfair Terms and Conditions and Consumer Contract Regulations in 1999. And what that basically says is that where a contract's pre-drafted, well, if you've gone on the internet and got a policy, it's pre-drafted. Where the terms and conditions in that contract can cause financial detriment to the consumer because it favours the insurance company, then where that term has been put in that policy, it should be redacted from the policy as if though it never existed.
Yeah.
So you can have something in a contract there, whereas, again, they're trying to do things in their favour all the time and steer it away, whereas unless you have that little snippet of information thinking, well, just because something's in a contract, it's applicable. Well, actually, no, it might be an unfair term and condition in a consumer contract. It doesn't. It can alter your buying process. So what you want to really do is, if an insurance company, or indeed any contract you enter into, has got terms that are going to be put you in a financially worse situation, you probably don't want to agree to it, really.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you need to fight them. And why would you want to fight when all you want to do is just make your life easy? So before you even buy a contract, you might think, God, I've not got the time to do that to. Well, the consumers I deal with are the ones who haven't done that.
Yeah.
And I'm dealing with the really nasty stuff at the back end of it, whereas I'm fighting insurance companies to make sure that they get, you know, the right protection and then they get the right compensation at the end of it that they wouldn't have done had they have not known. It's much easier, so even though really I should be selling my services because of what I do, it's actually much easier to not need me and just read the contract before you do.
Right.
So when you're on a price comparison website, if you see a quote that you think is a good price for you, and there's other tips I can give you in terms of how to make it cheaper as well, which is other things you can do, but read through it and then compare it against other policies, because you might find that if you purely look at the policy on the basis of price, you might find actually it doesn't give you the full extent of cover you think it would do.
Right.
And that could be anything in terms of guaranteed hire cars, if your vehicle's off the road, or in the event your vehicle's a total loss. So another quick one I'll touch on is that most people think that in the event of an accident that the insurance company provides your car.
Yeah.
And they don't. Absolute fallacy. The body shop who's an approved repairer, provide that car as a courtesy car. So there's a distinction there.
Yeah.
So it's a courtesy car, not a hire car. So it's a car given to you out of courtesy whilst your vehicle's repaired.
Yeah.
Now, as a consumer, if your vehicle's a total loss, they're not repairing your car. So it means that you might not get a car because they're not repairing it. So yeah. You're then stuck for going to work or whatever. So things like reading the contract and actually finding out, yeah, I'll pay an additional sum for a guaranteed hire car in the event that my vehicle's a total loss.
Yeah.
Because you want to make sure that you can move, basically. So it's things like that. Now, going back about 10 minutes ago at the start where I said about buying a policy, there's another thing, whereas if you actually speak to an insurance company directly, it's different. So you've got something called an advised sale.
Hmm.
So this is the difference between going online as a non-advised sale and then either dealing with a broker or speaking to an insurance company directly, and then you've got an advised sale. Now what they should then do is they have to do something, whereas they need to establish that it fits your demands and needs.
Yeah.
Fulfills it. So, because if they don't sell you something that fulfills your demands and needs, they've missold it.
Yeah.
Which affects like PPI claims. That's why you could claim off it, because they were selling things that you didn't need.
Yeah.
Same thing with car insurance. So they should be asking you specific questions about what your demands and needs are. And certainly if I had a really nice car that I've invested my savings into, I want to make sure that vehicle's getting repaired correctly, and I'd want to make sure that it's getting repaired probably by the manufacturer.
Yeah.
Because of how advanced vehicles are and because of all the equipment and additional systems that are on it. And I'll be asking that specific question with the insurance company, saying like, right, well, part of my demands and needs are is, in the event I have an accident, I don't want to make a claim, but when I do need to make a claim, I want to make sure my car's been repaired correctly.
Yeah.
So, is there anything that's going to stop me from me choosing my own repairer? So, are you going to put any barrier in front of me? So, is there any increased excess or anything like that on it? Because I don't want that.
Yeah.
I want to not have to pay extra to exert my right of choice to use my own repairer. And I want to make sure that when it does go to my repairer, rather than going to your repairer, that it gets fitted with new parts,
yeah,
not second-hand parts or non-original parts, and that I know that it's then being reinstated back to its pre-accident condition,
yeah,
as it would have been from the manufacturer. So something as simple as that, whereas it's just important then that whatever you buy, however you buy a policy, whether it is through either a price comparison website as a non-advised sale or speaking with the broker and the insurance company as an advised sale, that you've got something that fits your demands and needs. It does what you want it to do on the packet.
Tim Kelly, it's been fascinating, if at times, confusing.com. Free plug for somebody there. As I said, I mentioned Citroën as an example. It was not specific to them. So Citroën, if you're listening, don't get too upset. But Tim Kelly, motor claims guru.
Motor claim guru.
Motor claim guru.
Yeah, no S in it.
No S in it.
People search the wrong thing.
Thanks very much for joining me on the Backseat Driver Radio Show. As Tim has said, it's all the W's, motorclaimguru.co.uk. All the information you need is on there. If there's information you can't find on there, Tim's the sort of bloke who will talk to you and sort your potential problems out. But I hope you've learnt a lot, because I've learnt a lot, yeah, of the mystic art of car insurance. But Tim Kelly, thanks very much for joining me on the Backseat Driver Radio Show.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thanks a lot, Mark.